This is the registration form for our preschool. It's just like registration forms you find all over the country. All kinds of different organizations, schools, VBS programs, preschools, all sorts of things. And it has a line on it, and it asks for a question. Families, church, membership. And there's a blank there for you to write down either Presbyterian or Methodist or Baptist or Episcopalian or Catholic or whatever it is, what church you belong to. But what's happening and what has happened in the last decade is something rather dramatic. It's almost in epidemic proportions. More and more people are writing on that line the word none. What does that mean? That means these are people who have decided that they do not want to have any religious affiliations whatsoever. So they are called the nones because of that. Now, the question is, why is that happening? Well, there are many different reasons. Sometimes they say that it's happening because the nones feel that the church is irrelevant, or because it's homophobic, or because it lacks a sense of community, or because there's no real purpose to be involved in the life of the church. Maybe they don't feel that there's much education that's coming out of the church. All sorts of things kind of come together to make people feel as though they don't want to be a part of the church. And yet, we know that the church is very vital and doing everything it can possibly do to reach people in this world. Now, according to the Pew Research Organization, they have categorized the people who fall into this category of nones in several different ways. Those who are senior citizens, part of the great generation, 12% of them are in this category called nones. 15% of those who are nones are baby boomers. 19% are Generation Xers. And a whopping 29% are millennials, who are people born after 1980. Now, the nones, because they are leaving the church, they have caused a dramatic decrease in worship attendance that's happening all across the country. Some 85%+ of the churches in America are in decline. You go over into some third world countries and you'll find that Christianity is exploding and millions are becoming believers. But in our nation, where we are saturated with the gospel, we're going the other direction. And it's not going to get any better. It's going to continue to get worse. So, what are we to do? We are to help these nones who desperately want to know that God is real. One of the main reasons is they sense that God is not real, and not even real in the life of the church. So in order for us to help these people who are called nones to become involved in the life of the church again, we have to help them understand the reality of God in our world. That God is real. That God is among us. Excuse me. So, how do we do that? Well, before we can do that, we really have to go back and review some of the old and ancient arguments that prove that God exists in our world. Before we can talk about the reality of God, we've got to talk about His existence. Now, there are many different arguments. The first one I want to talk about is called the ontological argument. Basically, that word comes from two words, onto, which means being, and logica, which means either word or logic. And the ontological argument basically says that it came from Anselm, who was the Archbishop of of Canterbury back in 1078 A.D., and he actually presented this idea in a prayer meditation that he had written called Proslogion. And basically, Anselm said this. This is how you define God. God is that than which nothing greater can be thought. Now, in essence, what Anselm was saying is that because we have thoughts of God, that God must truly exist, that God must be real. And there must be something to that, because if you look throughout history, you'll find that there are a lot of religions that are scattered throughout history and throughout the world. Even in primitive tribal regions of the world where they don't know the God we know, they worship something. They worship a tree. They worship the river. They worship a cow, a bull. They worship the sun or the moon or the stars. Something. So within all of us is this inherent need this thought, this logia, to worship something. And so therefore, according to Anselm, that proves that God exists and must therefore be real. How many of you saw the movie Avatar? Many of us have. Of course, it's a make-believe movie about this world, this other world, and the earthly people go to conquer this world and take some mineral off of the planet. And the people who live there are called Navis, and they worship something. Even on this foreign world, there is this need to worship something. And they worship this god called Awe, which is a tree that looks like a giant weeping willow, and the branches are all lit up. And of course, it's just a make-believe movie, but it's an illustration that within all of us is an inherent need to worship something. Well, according to John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, Logia, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In other words, the Logia, the Word, the thought of God has always been with us, and it comes in its greatest package through the person of Jesus. A second argument that's been passed down through the ages is called the cosmological argument. And basically it comes from the word cosmos, which means universe or the great expanse of all that we know. And in that argument it says that because of the vastness of creation, the vastness, the awesomeness of the stars and the planets and all that we can see, there must be a God that created it all. And therefore, God must be real. He must exist. Now, as Linda read in Psalm 19, it says, the heavens are declaring for us the glory of God. The skies above us are proclaiming the work of His hands. In essence, what that means is all we have to do is look up in the middle of the night and we will see this vast expanse of creation that is mind-boggling. And that in itself is enough proof to tell us that God exists and that God is real. A third argument is called the anthropological argument. And the word anthropo basically means man or humanity. And it basically says that God created us in a way that is like Himself, which means that just as we have feelings and emotions, God has feelings and emotions. Just as we can show love and kindness and grace and forgiveness and joy and all of these other kinds of emotions, God has those characteristics as well. And so therefore, God must exist and God must be real. Galatians 5:22 says this, "The fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of God, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." Because we have those emotions and feelings, God has those emotions and feelings, so therefore God must be real. A fourth argument that has been passed down through the ages is called the teleological argument. It comes from the word teleos, which means perfect or complete. And basically, the ontological argument says that all of matter has been created by some supreme being and put together and designed in such a fashion that everything works in harmony, everything is perfect, everything is complete, and everything functions well. Now, we all have heard about electrons, protons, and neutrons, and we know those make up the basic building block of life, which is called the atom, and that atoms go together to make all things, and everything works around in circles and orbits and all of these things to function in perfect harmony. But scientists over the last 50 years have discovered that that's not all there is. There are actually particles that are smaller than electrons and protons and neutrons that actually make those up. There are teeny tiny particles known as quarks, you may have heard that word, or leptons, or neutrinos, or gluons, or bosons. And I'm not being a bozo, that's a real word. These are tiny particles that actually exist and make up all things. Now, Dr. Peter Higgs is one of the scientists that discovered some of these smaller particles. And because of that, one of those particles has been named after him. It's called the Higgs boson particle, or some people are actually calling it the God particle. Now, why are they calling it that? Because Dr. Higgs says that the Higgs boson particle, this God particle, actually pervades every part of existence. Every part of the universe is filled up by these tiny little particles called the Higgs boson. He says it's like an energy field that connects everything to everything. If I wave my hand back and forth, I'm waving it into this and through this energy field. It's all around us. It's all around Earth. It's all around in the universe everywhere. And because of that, they say that it's what connects all of life, and that's why they're calling it the God particle. It's almost a proof for other scientists, even though some reject it. It's almost a proof that there really is a God, that He is real and He exists. In Acts 17, we read these words, God did this so that men would seek Him and perhaps reach out for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us. For in Him we live and move and have our being. It's an amazing verse. Now, though there are other arguments to help prove the existence of God, there's one I want to conclude with, and I'm simply calling it the revelatory argument. It basically says that God has revealed Himself to us through the birth and the life and the death and the resurrection of the person, the real person of Jesus. Now, we know that Jesus was a true historical figure. That is an absolute fact, that He lived in this world, He lived among us, He put up with us, He accepted us, He loved us, He forgave us, He saved us, and that there has been more said about Jesus, written about Jesus, preached about Jesus, proclaimed about Jesus than any other human being ever in the history of the world. He is the most important person in our lives and the greatest of all proof that God is real and that God exists. So, how is God real in our world today? Well, the proof is everywhere, all around us, but it's especially in the person of Jesus. Now, those who call themselves nuns may wonder how God can be real, but all they have to do is open their eyes, not just to the stars above, but open their eyes and notice all of the stories, all of the encounters, all of the experiences that people have had, real people have had, with the real Jesus in our real world. And if you Google, how is God real in our world, you will find countless stories where people have shared their encounters with the true and real and living God. Some author, I can't remember the person's name, but some lady, a CNN, she was a CNN reporter, and she developed bone cancer, didn't know she had it, had a pain in her leg, went to the doctor, checked her out, and they did a MRI, and they discovered she had a tumor within the bone marrow of her bone, and the doctor said, oh my goodness, this is malignant, this is extremely serious, frightened her, and then when they came back later to do some further work on her, the doctor said, oh my goodness, I thought it was malignant, it should have been malignant, it was malignant, but it has come out as benign. And God must have performed some sort of miracle with you. And it so touched her and so moved her that she wrote this book. I think it's called God Stories. And it's about all of these people, many, many people who have had similar experiences where God revealed Himself to them. Now does that mean that God heals us all the time from all the things that plague us? No. And there's no real answer to that. God is God, and God does what God thinks is best. And we just have to trust in Him. But in her case, there was a healing, and it drew her to Christ. In 1999, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Mary Neal, very athletic, energetic person, went with her husband down to Chile, the nation of Chile, to go kayaking on a very famous river. It's spelled Fuy, Fuy or something like that. And it's an outstanding river to kayak. And when I was researching this, I pulled up a YouTube video of two guys that were kayaking this river. And one guy had a camera on his helmet, and he's going down this river, and it was unbelievable. I mean, it was filled with shoals. There were very few places where the water became still. I mean, they went through all of these shoals. They went over numerous waterfalls, anywhere from 3 or 4 feet to 15 feet, and just kept going. And it just was nonstop. It looked like a very exciting ride. Of course, these are Class 3 and Class 4, so they can be quite dangerous as well. Well, Dr. Mary Neal and her husband, who is also a physician, and some of their friends went to Chile to kayak this famous river. And they're going down the river. They're having a marvelous time. It's nonstop. There's a lot of energy, a lot of commotion, a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, a lot of screaming and cheering and all of this. And they came to this one waterfall, and they all went over it. And she went over it. She was the last one. And when her kayak went over the waterfall, the point of the kayak went straight down into the water, under the water, and jammed into some rocks and was stuck there under the water, completely submerged. You could not even see that there was a kayak there, completely invisible. And the force of the water coming over the waterfall was so great that it pushed her back and caused her to bend over into the kayak, and she could not lift her back up to get out of the kayak. She was completely wedged in the kayak and in those rocks. And she was underwater for over 30 minutes. Of course, she died. She drowned. When they got through, they were cheering. They were screaming, "Oh, this is great. Where's Mary?" And they thought, well, maybe she went down. Somebody went down the river and they couldn't find her. And somebody went back up the river. They couldn't find her. And they were in a state of panic. And they were wondering what to do and looking for. And some 30 minutes passed. And all of a sudden, her body just sort of came up to the water's surface. They took her to the shore. They began CPR. They worked on her, worked on her, worked on her. And she did not revive. And they were grieving her death. And then all of a sudden, she just woke up. And she said, "I've been to heaven, and I met Jesus." And then these two Chilean natives appeared out of nowhere, turned the kayak upside down, put her on it, took her up, and they had an ambulance. They had to cut through with machetes the cane poles to get to this road. And there is a dirt road, and there is an ambulance on this road. Now, what happened was when she said, I died and I went to heaven and I met Jesus," that's what she did. She floated up, she saw her body, and then she was in heaven. She experienced this amazing sense of love that she just could not explain. She said it just infused every part of her, and she did not want to go back to earth. And she actually met and talked to Jesus. But then this voice came and said, "You have to go back because your work on earth is not complete." Now think about that. That's a message for all of us. There is something that God wants to do through us that we have not yet completed, and He's going to work through us in such a way to complete that. Now, it's different for all of us. In her case, this voice said, "You are to go back because your husband has cancer. He doesn't know it, and if you don't get him to the doctor as quickly as you can, it will progress and he will die." And so when she got back, she explained that he needed to get to the doctor. He did, and they were able to remove the cancer. It's an amazing story. Watch this.
There are many definitions of dead. I had no pulse, and I wasn't breathing. Yes, I think I was dead. When I'm a scientist, highly trained surgeon, I am my own greatest skeptic. I felt my spirit peeling away from my body. And eventually I felt my body break free. And the moment I gave up control, I believe I was being held by Christ. And I had this incredible feeling of His just pouring His love into me. We use love as an emotional word. But it was as though you could not only feel it, but you could experience it and see it. And it was complete and absolute and pure. It was as though I'd been on this long journey to Earth, and now I was home. I spent a long, long time trying to analyze this and really trying to come up with an alternative explanation. I came to the conclusion that it was exactly as I knew it to be, which was true and real. There are some things that are beyond science and beyond medicine.
There's something that is beyond science and medicine, and we know what that is. It's the reality of Jesus and God who came into this world to save us. What makes this story so amazing is that Dr. Mary Neal is an elder in the Presbyterian Church of Jackson Hole in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And as an active church member, she did lots of things in the church and helped serve on the session. But this experience caused her to understand Jesus in a deeper, more real way than she had ever known before. And as you heard her say, that love was just beyond understanding. And as a scientist, she tried to discount it, to disprove it, to find out what had actually happened, that maybe it wasn't true, but she couldn't, because it is true, and we know it is, and it would be true for all of us. Though the nuns are continually asking questions about the reality of God in our world, all they have to do is open their eyes and look above, and they'll see the reality of the stars of heaven. And then all they have to do is open their eyes and look at Jesus, and they'll see the reality of the star of humanity. It just doesn't get any more real. Jesus. And the Father, and the Son. Amen.